This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuned in to the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Hari Raya Aidilfitri is just around the corner, and I'm sure most of us are busy with various preparations ahead of the big day. It can be daunting and hectic, but it can also be a fun experience amidst the chaos. Part of the preparation for many would be to get a new attire for their Baju Raya, and these days, Baju Raya comes in many different shapes, sizes, fitting and styles, with contemporary interpretations dominating and sometimes even headlining Raya trends. But in this episode, we're going to go back to basics and look at the original Baju Melayu that men wear for their Raya celebrations and trace its origins and evolution from top to toe. Asriza Aris, Senior Lecturer of Design Study, Fashion at the College of Creative Arts, University Teknologi Mara, joins me via Zoom to help me with this.
Okay, first of all, thank you for inviting me. I'm Dr. Asriza Aris, the Fashion Lecturer at UiTM Shah Alam. I have done my PhD in the traditional wear, the Malay traditional wear, and also teaching in other aspects of fashion as well at UiTM.
All right, so it sounds like you're the perfect person to answer all my questions today regarding Baju Melayu and also Baju Raya specifically.
I hope so.
let's start by looking at the origins of Baju Melayu, especially for men, right? How did they come to be and their association with Malay-Muslim main festivities, Hari Raya Aidilfitri and Hari Raya Aidiladha?
Okay, so Baju Melayu generally has been in the Malay community for so many, many years, you know, as long as 1400s. In the 1400s. So that time, it was the peak of the, during the Sultanate Melaka, that was the peak of the Baju Melayu as the pakaian adat, especially for the palaces, for the sultans, right? So in our culture, in the history, we call it the great tradition to wear the Baju Melayu. So it's a what we call tradisi agung. Focusing on the palaces, focusing on the royals to wear a perfect sample of attire for the mass. So after a while, the palaces feel that, you know, we should take this tradition to the community to make sure that everyone can also wear a full set of this attire. But so the difference that they make is the fabrication. So the fabric for the royals are usually songkay, you know, all the high-end materials, traditional textiles and all that. But for the normal people, they use lesser quality, lesser value of material. So this Baju Melayu, you know, has been developed or evolved in sometime over the years, according to time, to make sure that whether the baju can give comfort to the people who wears them. So at one time in the history, so it was said in the Salatin, Tun Bedara, Tun Hassan, he shortened the length of the baju. So at that time, before this, men and women wear their baju very loose and long. So she shortened the men's baju to make it equal to the length of the sleeves. So that's how it becomes shorter than the ladies' version. So at that time, the ladies wear the baju kurung or baju melayu up to the ankle, sometimes up to the floor. Okay? So when this happened, He redesigned the look of the length of the baju and make the men wear the baju melayu with trousers. Okay, so before we started to wear the English version of trousers, they wear the traditional trousers, which is called seluar aceh. Okay, so from there on, when the local people started to wear proper baju, set of baju, they wear only for festivals and only for special occasions because textile is very expensive in those days. it's very difficult to get good textiles to wear proper set of clothing. So they only wear for festivals, for special occasions. At other times, men don't usually wear shirts. They just put a long cloth around their body to wrap around the body. So I guess the tradition goes on, and we, when there are festivals like the Hari Raya, you know, and all that, we tend to celebrate this with the tradition to wear good clothing for these particular festivals.
All right. Okay. So the two main styles of baju Melayu for men, at least in Malaysia, are baju Melayu cekak musang and baju Melayu tudung belanga. One is collarless with a round neck style collar, and one is with a stiff collar and a more formal look. So what are the origins of these styles actually?
Okay. The one with the collar actually started with a guy named, if I'm not mistaken, Datuk Wan. So originally it was called baju Wan. Baju Wan, what with the Mandarin collar, because someone named Wan started the baju. Okay, so then the baju, the one without the collar or the collarless baju Melayu is also called baju lehe bulan. Obviously, you know, naming the baju is something that they thought relate to their surroundings, or relate to whatever the look of the design on the baju. So baju kurung lehe bulan, or baju now we name it baju kurung teluk belanga. Actually, baju kurung teluk belanga is specialized for baju kurung that has tulang belut around the neckline. Tulang belut stitching around the neckline, which originated from Johor. Okay, but now everyone just called baju kurung teluk belanga, and they meant it for the round baju kurung. So baju kurung baju kurung cekak musang is a standing collar, you know, that goes around the neck. So hence they got the name baju kurung cekak musang, I guess.
So cekak musang is in reference to what is it in reference to actually? Yeah, because teluk belanga, if I'm not mistaken, is the name of a place in Johor, right?
Yes.
So whereas cekak musang?
It's such a cut on the neck, around the neck. Oh. I don't think it has anything to do with musang.
I see. All right. Okay. So the thing is, when it comes to, I guess, the look of a baju Melayu, and especially because you're in fashion, right? So is sampin important? And, you know, are they always a part of the attire to complete the look, or are they a later addition to the, I guess, attire of baju Melayu actually?
Sampin has always been the part of baju Melayu. If you wear the baju Melayu without sampin, it doesn't look complete to me. And actually, there's in the Malay tradition, in the Malay tradition, there's a set of attire that should come together to be recognized as a full set. So usually for adat, they have the baju, seluar, sarpin, kain sebai, and then the headdress. So when they have 5 items, it's called lima persalinan. But if you have 3 persalinan, it's the baju, seluar, and the kain sarung. They don't call it kain sarpin at the time. They just call it kain sarung. So kain sarung has many purpose in the Malay tradition. So it can be kain sarung for sampin, it can be kain sarung for kain sarung like we usually wear at home. Because whatever kain that is joined together as a tube is kain sarung. So that's the definition of actual kain sarung.
And I think even before then, when songket was not accessible, it was definitely not. People don't wear something that's made of songket, right?
Songket is, I cannot imagine what was before songket. But when we have the tradition of wearing this baju Melayu, the great tradition we call it, songket was already in, and then songket was already part of the tradition in our royals' costumes. So the training of weaving the cloth. Weaving songket and all that we inherited it from, we learned it from the traders. We learned it from, I believe, from India traders who came in and bring the tools to weave the fabric. And that's how we learn. We learn, they taught the palace people, palace women, to weave our own fabric. So that's how we get the influence and the skill with the weaving skill in our culture.
Mm. Just now you also mentioned kain sabai. What was that? Yeah,
kain sabai is the shoulder cloth.
Oh.
It's a long piece of cloth to use to wrap around the body when they're not wearing any shirt. At that time, these people, the men, if they want to pass by the palaces, they shouldn't be, shirtless. So they always carry a piece of cloth with them, which sometimes they wrap it around the waist. So this piece of cloth has many uses, they can use to wrap around the waist. They can be used as shoulder cloth, where they can, just use it to wrap around to cover their head.
All right. Let's go back to sampin. How about the styling of the sampin? Because there is also a difference in style, right? Especially when you look at Teluk Belanga and Cekak Musang. Tucking in versus tucking out. Is there a difference in relation to just the collar, or is it always flexible? You can either tuck in or tuck out depending on your fashion sense, I suppose.
It's a style. So if you put the sampin outside, it's called dagang luar. If you put the sampin in, it's dagang dalam. And usually the sampin has the style coordinates with the baju itself lah. So if you're wearing baju Melayu Lehe Bulan, the colorless one, usually the sampin is inside the baju. So you wear the baju outside, the sampin. Yeah? But when you're wearing Cekak Musang, the baju is always inside the sampin.
Mm.
And then the sampin also, those days, the sampin speaks for the wearer. So how you ikat the sampin, where you put the bunga, whether it's in the middle of the body or the side of the body, will tell you whether you're still single, you're married, and things like that.
Okay, yeah. As far as I know, if I'm not mistaken, it's the length of the sampin, right? Whether it's below your knees or above your knees, right? But now that you mention it, that's also where you put the bunga?
Yeah.
Okay. So can you help explain to our audience?
The bunga is for, for the groom. So nowadays, people, when they don't know the meaning of placing this item, sometimes you get the groom wearing the bunga on the wrong side of the body, and you're giving a signal to other people that you're not single, you're a widow or things like that.
Okay, yeah. So just can you just explain it to the audience? What's the right way to actually put the bunga for people?
If the bunga is in the middle, if I'm not mistaken, he's a married man. So if the bunga is on the side, he's a single man.
Oh,
I hope I got it right, that one.
Okay.
Because it's not been practiced so much in the community. But for the length of the sampin, yes, if you're wearing your sampin shorter above the knee length, it's actually for single men. If you're wearing it on the kneecap, it's actually for married men. If you're wearing it lower than your knee length, it's actually for the alim ulama, for the wiser people.
Oh, okay. Wow, all right. So do people still practice this? Because I understand that. I mean, I've spoken to a bunch of friends and they're like, oh, okay, I don't think it matters.
Nobody practices, I think. I'm not sure about, Malays in other region or places. But I think it's something that just interesting to know. Because now people just, go with the style of fashion, what fits you and whether it looks good on you or not.
Mm.
Nobody really care about, how it is dressed. But you have some people that really, as I would say, the traditionalists especially, they still try to inject the knowledge and practice with the Malay community.
Mm. What about the bunga just now that you mentioned? Bunga means that it's not the typical style.
Tying knot.
Oh, okay. So even if you tie it the traditional, traditional way, the like tying at the kain plekat is still considered called bunga, right?
Yeah. Because, well, usually with grooms, they have that knot, the big knot in their sampin. But if you wear your sampin just for casual wear, you just roll it up, right? Mm-hmm. Roll it around your waist. And then there's another way of wearing the sampin. You can also wear it with bengkong.
Oh, okay.
Bengkong is a waist cloth. Usually when you wear it with bengkong, you would have a crease on your waist, to wear with the sampin.
Okay, so let's move on to an item that I think is not actually discussed a lot, but something that I'm quite curious as well. The buttons, buttons on baju Melayu, right? We've seen it evolve to something a little bit more elaborate or distinctive these days, depending on people's preference. But what was it like once upon a time? Do people actually have just simple buttons or
Button counts for baju Melayu is usually 5. Mm. Sometimes, or very seldom, in the 80s, I saw 3 buttons on baju Melayu. So actually, the normal ones are, the normal count is 5. So 5 buttons, it's showing your faith, in Rukun Islam. So that's how we interpret the button counts. But in other aspects of button counts, in the royal tradition, they have, like for the ladies, they have 5, 7, and 9. So it's always in the odd numbers. So when you have 9 buttons on you, you're the highest ranking in the royal family. When you have 7, you're the second tier. When you have 5, you're in the third tier. Usually it's like that.
Interesting.
And as for the men, normally it's 5. Sometimes they will have 7 for longer length of, split in the front of their baju.
What about the types of button? Is there any significance or cultural significance with regard to the kind of buttons people use? Or is it just style these days?
It's style. But, with the modern ones, I see some people, they use shirt buttons. To make it easy for, especially for kids' baju, they use shirt buttons so that you don't lose your button. Sometimes, like the artists or, people like that, they wear brooches to replace the button. So, again, there's nothing wrong with replacing with other items, but, for some good reason, people still wear the normal button with the khaki. The one, they still use that one.
Let's talk about headwear. I think the conventional styling to baju Melayu would be songkok. But have you seen anyone wearing something else? Like, for example, is kopia, does it match with baju Melayu,
Songkok actually comes in with the Middle East influence, with the Middle Eastern influence from the... we generally wear songkok. For older people, they usually wear kopia. So it comes with age, actually. I think it comes with age. The younger ones would prefer songkok. The older ones would prefer kopia. And then for sometimes, nowadays people are talking about destas, tanja, and all that. Yeah, you can wear them, but you actually have to know the meaning. I'm not an expert in tanja or destar, but... when you're wearing one, you need to know the meaning of these destas and stanja, because not all styles are meant for the mass to wear. And some desta, they wear it for everyday wear, and some desta are worn for formal function. So the Malay tradition and culture is very unique, because whatever is designed there, there's a symbol and meaning to the clothing. So we don't simply I like this, I just want to put this one, for my hari raya and all that. Because some of the destas are style, are only for the royals. So you have to know which to wear for your occasion.
Okay, what about footwear? You know, I think this is one aspect that's not really focused on, but what's considered classic and traditional attire when it comes to baju Melayu? You know, when it comes to pairing it with baju Melayu, when it comes to footwear, yeah? Can it
slippers?
Just be anything?
not the rubber slippers lah, you know, chapal.
Chapal would be the...
VSC chapal goes first because that is the style that, you know, the people on those days wear.
What about shoes?
Footwear.
Formal shoes. Do you think it looks suitable to be worn? Okay.
Formal footwear, like, you know, the black shoes and all that, court shoes and all that. Actually, it's initiated by the Palace of Johor. You know, the Johorians, they want to have a neater look in and much more formal look to the baju Melayu. So they're encouraged to wear proper shoes, you know, and socks. So for the normal people, they usually wear chapal. And if you ask me, for the mass, in those days, they don't wear any shoes at all. So, you know, that's not a concern to the look of the costume. So it's the great tradition that creates this set of look with what we are having now.
That was Asliza Aris, Senior Lecturer of Design Study Fashion at the College of Creative Arts, University Teknologi Mara, sharing the origins of baju Melayu for men from top to toe. We'll have more after the short break. Stay tuned. I'm Hanif Baharudin, and you're listening to I Love KL on BFM 89.9.
Kau nak pakai apa baju tahun lepas punya ketat sendat macam nangka. Hey, bulan puasa makan kena jaga kau melantar tak ingat dunia nak buat macam mana.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin. We're talking about Baju Melayu and Baju Raya in conjunction with the Raya celebrations happening very soon. Joining me for this conversation via Zoom is Asliza Aris, Senior Lecturer of Design Study Fashion at the College of Creative Arts, University Teknologi Mara. She has given us the origins of Baju Melayu and has broken down the full attire from top to toe in the earlier part of the show. Now we're going to talk about how Baju Melayu has evolved and its modernization. So let's talk about the evolution of Baju Melayu, right? So as I was growing up, Baju Melayu's, I think, styles remain pretty consistent with a few deviations here and there. I remember Baju Melayu Raihan being made popular for a number of years. But more recently, I think a lot of more people are beginning to be a bit more adventurous when it comes to experimenting with different styles. From something simpler, like having a modern fit with no pesa, to something a bit more radical, like, you know, like super slim fit styling or like three-quarter sleeve. What are your thoughts on this so-called modernization, quote-unquote, of Baju Melayu?
Okay, first of all, I must say my point of view is from the fashion side, okay? So if you are talking about traditional, those are nowhere near traditional clothing. You know, that kind of Baju will make all the traditionalists rejected all this Baju to be called Baju Melayu. And partly I agree with them as well. Because in fashion, once you are you have changed or you have made modification to your subject matter, you should name that new design something else. It's no longer, you know, with that origin. You can say that this Baju is inspired from the Baju Melayu. But first you have to look at whether the new baju, the form and shape of the baju is still known to the baju Melayu, the original baju Melayu. Is it what we call related to the form and function of the original design? If it doesn't relate in such a way that it can be seen that it's inspired from that baju, it is best to name it the new name, a modern name. You know, but the mistake that some people make here is they change the baju, they modify the baju to some extent that you no longer see the original shape or form of the baju, but they still want to call it baju Melayu because it is selling at Hari Raya season. Usually that's the case. With the women's baju also, that would be the case. You know, they say it is inspired from the traditional look, but when you change it so much and it doesn't have that character anymore, you should name the baju to a new name. You just don't relate it to baju Melayu anymore.
But for the sake of conversation, and again coming from perspective of fashion, what are your thoughts on all this newer design of baju Melayu, I suppose?
To me, when you create something new, when you redesign the baju, it at least trigger people to know where this comes from. So, you know, the traditional baju were, people say, people still want to know what the traditional baju looks like. And at the same time, the new ones, people still buy the new ones. So it's like, yang lama kita jangan tinggalkan, yang baru diraikan. It's that kind of concept, you see. So because the old ones, people still refer to. And when people refer to the old ones, there are people who will be looking at or searching for these traditional clothes to wear. At the same time, the new ones, they freshen up the idea of having this baju Melayu with the new generation. That's how I see it from the, you know, fashion view.
What are key features or design principles of baju Melayu that need to be kept consistent to make it still a baju Melayu from your perspective?
Okay, so of course the characteristics of baju Melayu, like you said, it is loose and the length of the baju is longer than your hip length. Okay, so if it's shorter, there is also baju Melayu which is shorter, which is called baju kurung kecil. But baju kurung kecil is worn for day wear. It's not for formal attire, and it's usually baju kurung kecil is worn with different types of material or clothing like plikat or batik and all that. So they are not sedondon or one set, right? And usually baju kurung kecil is worn for workwear at that time, in those days, for workwear to in the paddy field and things like that. So the formal attire of baju Melayu, you have to wear it certain length, and of course the pesak and the keke to make it roomy. So the principle of baju Melayu is in according to Islamic teaching. So what is in the Islamic teaching is you should wear your baju loose, not fitting or not fitted to the body for both men and women. So that is why the baju kurung has panels, which we call the keke and pesa, to cover, you know, to cover the form of your body. So it's not too tight fitting to the body. The elements of the neckline, especially whether it's the lehi mulan just now, the round neck, or the cekak musang. So for men, there are only these two styles, cekak musang or lehi mulan. And for the ladies, the cekak musang has different styles as well, which created the baju riau pahang, you know, and all that.
All right. So there are newer, quote unquote, newer design or minimalist baju Melayu that still retains most of the look, except that there's no pesak. So technically, by your definition, that also wouldn't qualify as a traditional baju Melayu lah, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, many people, the sellers or the market, they call it baju Melayu modern. They usually call it baju Melayu modern. But in terms of the character of the real baju Melayu, it's no longer baju Melayu without the Pesta and Keki. Because these two things are the most, I say, significant characters of baju Melayu.
All right, fantastic. Okay, so apart from baju Melayu, the Raya period has also sparked a proliferation of other styles of baju Raya, from jubah once upon a time being popular to now kurtas. I guess globalization might have helped in this, but beyond that, why do you think we're adopting these styles for Hari Raya?
I think for us, being in the multiracial community, we are more readily to accept, you know, differences of cultures and all that in our community. So we adapt and adopt, you know, our cultures from others, and we just wear them. We just wear them when it looks good on us. Mm-hmm. So, and then another thing also, like the kurta and jubah, it has been in our community for that many years as well, because when we were Malacca Sultanate, we had traders from the Middle East and from India that come and stay here in Tanah Melayu. So they're not foreign to us in terms of their culture and all that. So, and the look of kurta, if you see only a slight difference on the stand collar that differentiate kurta from cekak Musa. Right, so the same thing goes with the Chinese costume, the cheongsam. A slight difference of technique or overlapping of the collar could differentiate this is from the Chinese costume. So I think it's not difficult for us to adapt and adopt other people's culture.
Yeah. What about the popularity of Teluk Belanga these days, which I think is a bit more mainstream compared to before? I mean, you have kurta being a lot more popular now, but you also have Teluk Belanga becoming a bit more mainstream compared to cekak Musang. Because once upon a time, again, as I was growing up, you know, you always associate people wearing Teluk Belanga with them being from the south, from Johor. So, but these days, I mean, even sellers, again, sellers to a certain extent, they sort of like sway the market as well, right? If you think about it, they are selling a lot more Teluk Belanga compared to cekak Musang. So do you think that that's just them responding to the market? Or is there an actual rise in popularity of Teluk Belanga compared to cekak Musang?
It's actually, to me, it's individual preference, you know, what you want to wear. But I see, you know, with the new generations that we have now, they like simple designs and they like much more casual design. Actually, when we say baju kurung Teluk Belanga, I always envision baju kurung Teluk Belanga is the Johor baju kurung Teluk Belanga with the tulang belut and all that. Mm. So what we have in the market is baju kurung Leher Bulan. It's not baju kurung Teluk Belanga. So that's how I feel. But of course, you know, they will say this is baju kurung Teluk Belanga. To me, it's not, because it's without the tulang belut. Without the tulang belut, it's, to me, it's not baju kurung Teluk Belanga.
Okay. And just for our listeners' knowledge, the tulang belut is actually situated on the collar.
It's a hand-stitched technique that looks like embroidery around the neckline of the baju kurung bulat leher bulat. So the purpose is to stiffen the neck and to stabilize the shape of the neck. Mm. So there are a few others. A few other hand stitches that can be used, like tulang peranggi and also mata lalat. But, you know, these two other is usually one on the ladies. As for the men, it's always tulang belut. So, when you say baju kurung Teluk Belanga is more popular than cekak Musang, most probably is when you're selling it for mass production and for mass production sizes, SML, you know, it's easier to fit on the men's size with baju kurung Teluk Langa rather than Baju Kurung Cekak Musang. Because Baju Kurung Cekak Musang, you need to have a good measurement around the neck. If you wear it slightly loose, then it looks, you know, wobbly around your neck. If you wear it too tight, then you're not comfortable with it. So, yeah, because I think it's easy fitting.
Yeah, as well as the fact that I guess it makes the attire looks less formal as well, right? A bit more casual. All right. Okay. So, it's interesting that we've been, talking about this. How do you foresee the trend of Baju Melayu for men evolving in the next few years? You know, what's next?
It will be in forever because it's an evergreen design, and I think it grows with the Malay culture. You cannot leave out Baju Melayu in the Malay society. It's always there. There's always someone who will, you know, preserve this baju and make it a trend for every season, because baju, this kind of baju, I mean, for not Baju Melayu for men. Baju Melayu for men, maybe you can only wear it, on Fridays for offices, right? But you cannot wear it every day. But you can always wear it to the mosque. You can always wear it for festivals, keramaian, kenduri, and all that. It's just that people think that if you're wearing it the full set, you're going to be the one, you know, outshine from the rest of the others in the crowd, you know. But to me, there's nothing wrong wearing it for kenduri, kendara and all that, you know, as long as you know where your place is. So the thing is with the Malay tradition, what differs for you from one another is the textile, is the fabrication. So if you want to wear your attire, your full set with lesser value of fabric, you will become like a day wear, you know, a daily wear. But if you wear it with a kind of high-end fabric, if you wear it like songkit, if you wear things like kain tenun, it will immediately change the look of the baju and it will become very formal and the look become, you know, more expensive. So it's the people's choice.
All right. Okay, fantastic. So, I mean, we've been focusing a lot on men's attire primarily in our conversation today. So what about baju kurung for ladies? Based on my observation in terms of, I guess, the conversation surrounding whether something is like in or not, or something is considered traditional or not, in the men's fashion, it tends to be a bit more, I guess, the pushback can be stronger sometimes when it comes to, I guess, the traditionalists, I guess, getting a bit upset with those who are contemporarizing things. But when it comes to baju kurung, I feel like it's a bit more fluid, I think, in terms of, I guess, the acceptance of modern contemporary designs. What are your thoughts on that?
I think as long as, the same thing goes with the men's baju, as long as you keep the traditional character, for baju kurung, the keke, the pisa, the round neckline and all that, you'll be safe. Yes, it, because the ladies has more choices on fabric. You know, there's no issue if you want to use a lightweight material which is slightly transparent, or you want to use lace, or you want to use embroidered material on your baju. It's I think that makes it why the ladies' form of baju traditional is more acceptable in different presentations. But for men, is this much more rigid in terms of the fabrication. So if you use, like, you know, I remember one design in the early 2000s, which they introduced men's baju Melayu in lace, and I think it is simply ridiculous, even if there's anyone who wanted to wear it. So, you know, if you want to show the feminine side of the design, maybe there are other ways of showing it instead of using, you know, real lace fabric, which is meant for women to wear on men. Now I'm sounding like someone. Okay, anyway, for the ladies, like I said, the form is more acceptable if you want to change it, because there are so many flexibility to redesign the baju. But again, once you redesign the baju, you shouldn't be calling it baju Melayu anymore. You shouldn't be calling it baju kurung anymore. Nowadays, I see that, you know, many designers have called their baju jelita, you know, other names rather than naming it baju kurung modern.
From your perspective, I think that's the best way to go about it, I suppose, rather than, I guess, calling it the traditional name and yet not following the tenets of the design,
yeah,
right?
Because once you call it, once you give it a traditional name, you trigger everyone in the traditional side of the section, you see? Because even I'm not calling myself a traditionalist, but when you say this particular baju kurung is a baju kurung, when you're not wearing it with a kain pombak mengalun, we call it, you're wearing it with a modern A-line kind of skirt, and there's no longer pesta or KK in the baju. You just use the round neckline with the slit and you're calling it baju kurung. I cannot accept that, because I to me, that's a blouse. That's just a modern blouse.
Okay, and anything else you want to add before we end the conversation?
Okay, well, with all the things going on with the local fashion, I think it's a healthy competition among the producers. So keep producing.
You've been tuning in to I Love KL, and we've been talking about Baju Melayu and its evolution with Azliza Aris, Senior Lecturer of Design Study Fashion at the College of Creative Arts, University Teknologi Mara. That's all we have for this episode of I Love KL. If you miss any part of the show, you can look for the podcast on our website, bfm.my/ilovekl. Alternatively, you can also download our app, which is available on both Google Play and the App Store. I Love KL can also be found on Spotify and other streaming platforms. Don't forget to also follow the station on X at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharudin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Selamat Hari Raya and maaf zahir dan batin. Have a safe one. We'll be back after the Raya break, only on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.